So we're driving to dinner last night. My wife and I were driving to dinner. And she says, do you know that when you come on first thing in the morning with Andy and Gina before they do the ID, you don't say good morning? You don't say hello?
You just launch right in?
I guess. So,
and how does that
morning.
Make you feel?
Good morning, everybody. All right, now before, because I think Andy is on the board here, but before I do that, let me read this. This is from Phil. Maybe this is already a known fact, but Andy's natural voice is a dead ringer for Will Ferrell's Ron Burgundy.
What?
please have the talent.
No.
Exploit that, Jim, on the show, beginning with the legal read. Love the show so much, Phil. Now, I'm assuming this is falling on deaf ears for you?
I've never heard that before. Right. Is that a thing?
If this is true, I have a request. Will you please add Los Angeles, Orange County, and San Diego?
Stay classy, San Diego. So, I mean, look, even though you're not aware of it, according to him, if you just speak like you normally do, but picture Ron Burgundy with the vibe that he has, you may just find a new voice inside there.
All right. I'll give it a try.
Right. Focus.
Do you smell that? That's dawn. Smells like cinnamon. Was it just me or everything? I have a stripper's name, Dawn Cinnamon. 100.3 The Sound is KSWD, FM, and HD1, Los Angeles and Orange County, Southern California's classic rock. And stay classy, San Diego, you pirate hooker.
Nice.
I was unaware. Blissfully unaware.
Yeah, well, see, we all had a chance to listen to something at its very beginning, at its origin.
We heard
you find your Ron Burgundy.
My inner Ron Burgundy.
Yeah.
Everyone should find their inner Ron Burgundy.
So today we have an action-packed show. Obviously, we're going to talk all about the Oscars. Now, we also, you know, you're sitting there and you're watching the Oscars and they said the names of the nominees and their five faces are right there on five different cameras and little pop-up windows. And then they say the name of the winner. And then the other four people have to smile and clap for the fact that they just lost in front of a billion people.
Right.
Today we have the loser speeches. These are the speeches that if these losers could have been at a podium, it's what they would have said. I'm trying to explain the comedy.
It's what they would have said had they won. Or no. It's what they now have to say since they've lost.
Yes. Right. If they had a convention, and this again is me explaining the comedy. If they had a convention and they said, all of you who lost, get up to the podium and say what you'd like to say now. And you're going to have to help me explain this later.
This is going to be uncomfortable.
Exactly. Which is where you want the comedy. Now today, on a serious note, Sam Farmer. Wait, before I move away from the Oscars, I found a quick article about the Oscar envelopes. I think it may, I don't want to say blow your mind, but it may impress you as to the trouble people go to make those envelopes. So we'll run that down. But Sam Farmer, who covers the NFL for the Los Angeles Times, is going to join us. He is inside the inside. So we're going to find out, we're going to strip away all the rumor, and we're going to find out, as of this moment, exactly what is the situation with the NFL coming back to Los Angeles.
Yeah, the half-page story on the front of the LA Times, he wrote. He knows all that stuff.
Yes, no, I'll get into it when we talk to Sam, but he's a great guy, and it's freaky the stuff that he knows about the NFL. Joey Fatone, we've got us an in-sinker today, plus Retta from Parks and Rec. Everything will be revealed. All of you remain where you are. This is Mark in the Morning. This is 100.3 The Sound. Weekend, I want to hear what you guys did. Last night, I went to a Mexican restaurant with my wife. She wanted to celebrate. You probably didn't know this. Yesterday was National Margarita Day.
I was not aware.
This woman celebrates everything. She decorates for Easter.
She's devout.
She decorates for St. Patrick's Day. So we went to celebrate St. Patrick's Day.
And by the way, the other day when you said it was the Chinese New Year, and so you went out and you wore red, I thought you were talking about your dog.
Red draped around my shoulders.
Or around your waist. Whichever way. Sorry, but anyway, she goes all out.
We go to this Mexican restaurant. She orders her margarita, which this restaurant has a really good margarita. We didn't recall, because it had been a while since we ate there, we didn't recall how bad the food was. This is a Mexican restaurant that can screw up a soft taco, which they did. And I ordered a cheese enchilada, and it wasn't actual cheese. It was cheese sauce.
That nacho sauce, like from the ballpark?
Yeah, and I'm telling you, if it were not for the beans and rice, we would have not had dinner of any kind. And that's just what it was. Also, I got a haircut this weekend. Thank you. I know it looks good. So the girl that I go to, her name is Stephanie. And Stephanie is, you might have noticed I have a sarcastic sense of humor.
He's a little pissy this morning.
And Stephanie, she enjoys my sarcasm. However, Stephanie is 5 months pregnant. So Linda warned me, you can't go in there and do the normal thing. You may set her off. Mm. So I went in. I was very, not only did she not cry, she didn't even well up.
That's nice.
Well,
I think that's victory, isn't it?
Yeah.
You didn't make
smart.
A woman cry.
Thank you, exactly. The day is young.
Yeah.
Wow. All right, so your weekend, Andy, because all I can say is we were all watching the Oscars together, which we'll talk about in a minute. We were texting each other, because it's funny. You talk to somebody nominated, and all of a sudden they're your best friend, and you're cheering for them to win.
Yeah.
But your life was hell on earth this weekend?
Yeah, I've got a sick infant. You know, she's 6 weeks old and has another cold. Oh. So spending the weekend, trying to make her comfortable, steam baths and all sorts of, homeopathy. Because there's not much you can do with a 6 week old kid.
Right.
You know, you can't pump them full of medicine and so forth. You just have to kind of make them as comfortable as you possibly can. And she was getting better, less fussy. And we saw a lot of smiles from her this week. So that was great, a welcome change. But I got to see, only bits and bobs of the telecast.
Well, I giggled at you on several occasions over the weekend because I asked you on Friday, what are you doing this weekend? And you said, we have sick children, so I'm doing whatever my wife tells me.
Yeah.
Tomorrow, by the way, we're going to learn the entire story of Andy and Lara's birth of their child, fully update you on exactly what went on there. Gina, your weekend.
My weekend was pretty great, actually. Remember when we had the awesome comedian Maz Debrani on?
Yes.
Went to see him at the Wiltern, do his big taped show. It was awesome. He's hysterical. Mm. And My friends, I feel pretty savvy when it comes to tech and comes to TVs and phones. I learned a video on demand this weekend, and I got lost in a black hole of Dance Mom's Lockup and Better Call Saul. Patrick Fabian, by the way, excellent. And I'm sorry I couldn't participate in the all the texting that was going back and forth during the Oscars, but I was working because... Oh. That's what we do around here. We radio people, we're always working. So I was doing a podcast during the Oscars and trying to keep up. So sorry I didn't have my phone right next to me.
Well, that's just too much. No, sorry. This weekend, I crap you not. I went to bed Friday and Saturday night at 9:30 and I slept till 7:30.
Grandpa Mark.
That's nuts. See, no, that's the thing. When you get old, you can't sleep that well. I was knocking down some Z's.
Oh, I did the exact same thing, but I did it on 9 inches of the bed. 9 inches.
Always respected. What do you say we rock the dump? This is Mark in the Morning, 100.3 The Sound.
Might have liked that a little too much.
Really bouncy.
Am I making you uncomfortable with my love of music?
That and other things.
Let's find out what's trending. Here's Gina.
Oscar night was neck and neck for Birdman and Boyhood, but ultimately Birdman crushed Boyhood, winning 4 Oscars, including Best Picture. Patricia Arquette won Best Supporting Actress at the Oscars for Boyhood. By the way, that's the only Oscar Boyhood won. And she used her speech to champion women's rights. And here's what's trending in sports. LeBron James has just surpassed Allen Iverson on the career scoring list. He is now 22nd all-time in points. I'm Gina Grad, and that's what's trending online on Mark in the Morning.
What's he suppressing?
Yeah, like a bad cold.
Yeah.
Well, Let's waste no time. So the Oscars, I had a chance to watch the majority of it, and it laid a little flat for me. You know, Neil Patrick Harris did a fine job. He's very likable, but there weren't a lot of highlights. And because there were no surprises with the awards, all of the Oscars went to the people that we've all been talking about this last week. Everybody that was supposed to win won, with the exception of, you know, I've been cheering for Michael Keaton the whole time, and he didn't. But Birdman was the big, big, big winner.
But you also knew that Eddie Redmayne was going to take it, even though it's not what you wanted. We all kind of had that feeling.
Yes, yes. So that wasn't a shock at all. I was hoping that something would happen, and it didn't. One of the funniest moments was when they had John Travolta present with, what's her name, Idina Menzel?
Yes.
Idina Menzel.
Adil Duzim.
That was very funny, I thought, on their part. But for the most part, a couple of highlights. There was, well, for example, Lady Gaga came out and sang The Hills Are Alive and a medley of other songs from The Sound of Music in honor of the movie's 50th anniversary. At the end, Julie Andrews came out, hugged Gaga, and then presented the award for original score.
Mm. Girls in white dresses with blue satin sashes, snowflakes that stay on my nose and eyelashes, silver white winters that melt into spring. These are a few of my favorite things. When the dog bites, when the bee stings, when I'm feeling sad, I simply remember my favorite things, and then
you know, if you're not a fan of Gaga, you tend to get caught up in the costumes and the whatever, and you don't realize what an absolutely gorgeous voice the woman has.
She has a real talent, and as a matter of fact, if you listen to that closely, she's singing it British.
Well, the thing is a lot of musical theater people were pissed because she sounded like she was doing her Julie Andrews impression.
That's exactly it.
But I have to hand it to her. There's so many musical theater snobs out there, and I actually thought she really upped her mainstream street cred last night. She did a beautiful job.
She did. I thought she did a fine job in doing it, and she sang the song very, very well, but she also took it a notch higher in difficulty by making it sound
much easier. Watch this. Girls in white dresses and crisp apple strudel, doorbells and sleigh bells and schnitzel with noodle. You can fake it a lot easier that way.
Madonna was just in this room.
Yeah.
Well, Katie is a huge Gaga fan, and Katie has already told me that she and I, nobody else can come apparently, it's a daddy-daughter date. We're going to go to the Hollywood Bowl for Gaga and Tony Bennett.
Oh, are you excited?
You know, to be honest with you, I am. I have
cool.
I have all the respect in the world for Gaga. Obviously, Tony Bennett, basically Gaga's holding him up. You know, I think he's going to have to sit down most of the show.
Yeah.
And
I'm
all good with that. Katie wants to do it. I'm pumped for it. I've already beaten the system. It's going to the Hollywood Bowl with the traffic and the parking. I already got that beat. I know exactly how to do it.
And you'll never tell us, or you won't have the system beat anymore.
I'll go ahead and tell you now, but I won't ever repeat it.
Okay.
I get a hotel room right down from the Hollywood Bowl. I check in the afternoon, have some lunch, do whatever, hang out, and then I walk to the Hollywood Bowl and then back to the hotel after it's over.
You're a damn genius.
It revolutionizes it, because without that, I cannot, will not go to the Hollywood Bowl. That thing where they park cars right up against your bumper,
stacking
your front, never again.
Yeah.
Never again.
Yeah.
I was wronged in that way. And I will never go back to it. That's it.
Wronged.
Now, I think one of the finest moments was for the gentleman who wrote the adapted screenplay. He was receiving his Oscar. He wrote the adapted screenplay for...
Imitation Game?
Yes, thank you. And he took that moment to share this.
When I was 16 years old, I tried to kill myself because I felt weird, and I felt different, and I felt like I did not belong. And now I'm standing here, and so I would like for this moment to be for that kid out there who feels like she's weird, or she's different, or she doesn't fit in anywhere, Yes, you do. I promise you do. You do. Stay weird, stay different, and then when it's your turn and you are standing on the stage, please pass the same message to the next person who comes along. Thank you so much.
Best speech of the night. Best speech of the night.
Yeah, and you could tell how nervous he was to say it. It's obvious he wanted to say it, and it was the proper place to say it. And I really loved what he said, because we've all had that moment in our life where we just didn't feel like we fit in. Some of us still feel that way.
Is it the right place for me to say that I don't think that screenplay should have won?
That would be the wrong place for
me. Oh, this is the wrong place to do that. I think it's an important movie. And right. And I think that what he said, it was the best speech of the night. But it reminds me of Lost in Translation several years ago. Mm-hmm. Sofia Coppola should have won director. She should have won Best Director that year. Instead, she won for Best Screenplay. Did you read the screenplay? I did, and it had segments like, okay, here's an example. They chit-chat about pickled seaweed. What?
Terrible, write
some dialogue.
I
love the movie.
I hated it.
But write some dialogue, for crying out loud. Yeah. They have a conversation about pickled seaweed. Seriously? I thought you should have gotten, because of the mood that it presented and the way it showed Tokyo and the desolate relationships or how they're feeling and so forth simultaneously in different places. I thought it was great. But they do that. And this movie, this imitation game thing, it was stilted, and the guy comes out in a pub, and it was...
Weird. Honestly, I wanted Imitation Game to win Best Picture, so I'm glad it won the Best Original Screenplay.
I want to go back to Lost in Translation. Andy loved it. Gina hated it.
Yes.
I found it really, really interesting. I found it odd how intrigued I was in this almost nothing story. And I was intrigued by what he was going through and his fascination with this girl and all these things. However, I saw it the one time, and I've had no desire to go back and see it again.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
So I don't know what that means.
Sure. Well, I think
it means you hated it.
I think that you're exactly right, and there was symbolism in the simplicity of it. Like, sometimes in relationships, you can't always put your finger on why it's not working. But this movie, this Imitation Game, for me, the computer, the machine, was the most interesting character in the whole thing. And if you're not making a sci-fi movie, that's a problem.
Yeah, I thought the whole computer character, quote-unquote, was kind of beautiful. But then again, I didn't get lost in translation. I was totally lost.
All right, so if you just woke up and you haven't heard, basically the big winner of the night was Birdman. Birdman won Best Picture, Best Screenplay, Best Original Screenplay, and Best Director. So that's pretty much as big a night as you can have.
And you're still angry because Michael Keaton didn't win.
I really wanted him to, but I have to say, and Gina reminded, I mean, Eddie Redmayne did exactly what the Academy loves. They love when you transform yourself. And so when he won it, though I was cheering for Michael, I was not surprised at all, because I really felt like that's the way it was going to go. I was hoping for a little bit of an upset, because I don't know that Michael's going to get another shot at it. So I was cheering. It just didn't work. Best Actress, as we expected, Julianne Moore, still Alice. Best Actor, Eddie Redmayne. Best Supporting Actor, J.K. Simmons, Whiplash. Patricia Arquette for Boyhood, for Best Supporting Actress. And Best Adapted Screenplay, as we said, The Imitation Game.
By the way, that still Alice, did you see Tim McGraw's take on that song, that Glen Campbell song?
I did.
What'd you think?
Well, I had read that when he was in rehearsals with it, there wasn't a dry eye in the house.
Yeah, I read that too.
And
there was a dry eye in my house.
Yeah, well, I mean, it was oddly dry, his performance of it.
It was interesting to me that an 80-year-old man with Alzheimer's put more feeling into the song than he did. And I get it. You're playing in front of a billion people, and it's not an easy stage by any stretch of the imagination. But yeah, it kind of fell flat for me.
All right, now I'm going to read the Razzies, then I'm going to ask you both a question, which you will answer when we come back. Kirk Cameron had a huge year at the Razzies.
You're saying that like he should be proud.
He was the big winner at the 35th annual Razzies. It honors the worst movies and performances of the year. The Growing Pains star got 4 awards: Worst Actor, Worst Picture for the Christian family comedy Kirk Cameron Saving Christmas. Cameron Diaz also had a big night as Worst Actress for her performance in The Other Woman and Sex Tape. Previous Razzie winner Ben Affleck was given a new honor, the Razzie Redeemer Award, for his performance in the thriller Gone Girl. So I guess if you'd won a Razzie, but then you go out and do good,
you can be redeemed.
You can.
Vindication. I love
it. Now, here's my question. Don't answer now. We'll come back. Normally, as you know, every film that's being made, they're vying. They want to be a fall release. And the ones that are deemed by the studios as not good enough or lacking something, they're put into what I've always called the dumping ground, January, February, March. Now, I don't know that that's the case anymore, but here's my question. What movie was, and I'm talking in the last 20 years, what movie was released in February and it won the Big Five? Best Picture, Best Screenplay, Best Director, Best Actor and Actress. Think about it, and all will be revealed. Andy's Capsule is 20 minutes away, and we're going to learn about the Oscar envelope momentarily. Mark in the Morning, 100.3 The Sound. Okay, so now let's extend this. I got a question on the table. I'll repeat it in just a minute. If you think you might know or if you want to play, I'm sure we got something in the booty box. The phone number here for Jackie is 888-696-1003. Be careful. Jackie's a tad pissy today. 888-696-1003. Here's the question. What movie was released? I'm going to go ahead and guess. I'm pretty sure it was the 90s. So let me say a movie in the last 30 years. Normally, you want to release your big films in the fall. This one was a February release, and then it went on to win the Big Five. Best Picture, Best Screenplay, Best Director, Best Actor, Best Actress. If you have a guess and you get it right, it's 888-696-1003. Santana, personal friend of mine. Mark in the Morning, we have a question on the table, so I'm going to ask Andy and Gina to write down their answer. The question is, again, it was a February release. Normally, that's the place where movies are dumped that didn't make the fall. This particular February release went on to win the Big Five, which is Best Picture, Best Screenplay, Best Director, Best Actor, Best Actress. What is the film? We move to Bill. By the way, have you two written down your answers?
Yes.
Yes.
Are you confident with your answers?
No.
I am confident with my answer.
Check you out. I like you on Mondays because you are squirrely.
Beady.
Shifty.
Let's go to Bill from Anaheim. Bill, welcome into the program.
Hi, Mark. Great show. Glad you're back.
Thank you, man. So you've heard the question. Now share us, which movie do you think it is?
I think it's Titanic.
No.
Titanic has blockbuster, summer blockbuster written all over it.
Yeah, I don't know exactly when it was released, but it is not the answer to the question that I am asking.
Okay, next time.
Thank you, Bill. Talk to you soon. Let's go to Don. Good morning, Don.
Hi, good morning. How are you guys doing?
Really good.
Great.
All right, Silence of the Lambs.
Andy, what did you write down?
I wrote down a little film called Silence of the Lambs.
Gina, what did you write down?
I was going for the most boring film ever to win, so I went with The English Patient.
Oh, agents, darling, you think you can dissect me with this blunt little tool?
No. I thought that your knowledge...
You're so ambitious, aren't you? Do you know what you look like to me with your good bag and your cheap shoes?
What?
You look like a rube. A well-scrubbed, hustling rube. A little taste. Good nutrition has given you some length of bone, but you're not more than one generation from poor white trash, are you?
Now, I don't know what they were thinking, because now, I think maybe now producers are starting to get into the mindset of, hey, we've got a pretty good film. Let's drop it in February. Mm-hmm. We'll be the superstars of the screen. We'll make money. But those movies that want to go for awards, they want to be seen in the fall close to voting. But that film kind of shot down the idea that you have to be released in the fall to be noticed. It won the Big Five, and rightfully so. One of the great films of all time.
Oh, it's so good. Is she a great big girl?
Does Andy win something from the booty box?
No, Andy doesn't, but Don does. Don, what Well, first, let's go through it, and then you can tell us what you might like.
Don, we are lousy with prizes this week, so I'm just going to hit you with a couple real quick. Boston, Fleetwood Mac, Jimmy Buffett, Steely Dan, Rock of Ages. What's your poison, my dear?
Oh, my goodness. Boston sounds great.
Well, it sounds great to us, too. A pair of tickets to see Boston at the Forum, July 26th. Tickets on sale Friday, February 27th at 10. You, my dear, are going for free.
Perfect. Thank you very much.
You're so welcome.
Hey, and Mark, may I say, loved you before, love you now. Glad to hear you back.
You're a good man, Don. I appreciate you listening. Next time you call, though, I reserve the right to make fun of you.
Anytime. You know, you did it with my daughter years back when she called before about, I think, Home Improvement on their last last time they were going to be, you know, the show was going to go off the air. She had a conversation with you and Brian, but she had fun.
Also, Don, for the future, be careful when you say things like, you did it with my daughter a couple of years back. Freaked me out. I didn't know what was going on there, but we're okay. We're
all
okay.
Right.
Don, thank you for the call, and thank you for listening.
All right, you got it.
All right, so a little later I'll get into this because we're tardy, but the envelope. Last night we watched this big gold envelope being opened. I'm going to throw a couple of fun facts about that envelope that I think you might get a kick out of. We have the loser speeches of the Academy, and plus we speak with Sam Farmer. He covers the NFL for the Los Angeles Times. He will fully explain what is happening with Los Angeles getting an NFL team back. It's all coming up. This is Mark in the Morning. This is 100.3 The Sound. Mark in the Morning, 100.3 The Sound. We've been talking about the Oscars, and Andy said something this morning during a break that I registered myself, and I'll just repeat it. Until last night, both Andy and myself did not know that this chick from 50 Shades of Grey is Melanie Griffith's and Don Johnson's daughter.
Yeah.
Yes, indeed. Dakota Johnson.
Johnson. It never would have... registered to me. And by the way, before last night, it didn't register with me that Melanie Griffith looked like a Salvador Dali painting.
Oh, Andy.
Wait. I mean...
She was so checked out. Did you watch that interview? She's like,
yes.
I'm not going to watch the movie.
Yeah,
like,
see,
well, maybe you will at some point, Mom. No, I'm not going to watch it.
Yeah,
well,
see,
maybe
that was...
at some point, Mom, since I'm on national television, you might say you might check out my movie. And then she finally capitulates. But
We actually witnessed a little bit of not only an eye roll, but we witnessed mom and daughter snipping in front of a billion people.
Yeah. Which is a classic mom and daughter move, which, you know, that makes you feel like, oh, I can relate to you.
Yeah, we get that with you and Katie all the time.
But did you guys notice how many people said, screw it, I'm not bringing my hot, sexy spouse or boyfriend or girlfriend. I'm bringing mom. I'm bringing dad. I'm bringing my brother.
I love that. And who was the guy that made this? Oh, was it J.K. Simmons?
He talked about it, but in the
speech.
Call your parents.
Call your mother.
Don't
call
text
your parents.
Them. Don't email them. Call them and let them talk for as long as they want to.
You know, I found that interesting as well. I like what he said, but you also notice that, and obviously he's won every single award, so I'm sure he's thanked cast and crew, but this is the Oscars, and he didn't even bring them up, not at all.
Yeah, I thought about that, because so many people said, you know, Miles Teller got boxed out, you know, his co-star.
And the
he
drummer.
Didn't say, he didn't say a word about him.
Yeah, you know, look, I understand that you've hit it 50 times with every other award, but this is the Oscars, so before you hit the call mom and dad, maybe throw a couple of the names in there.
You know, another thing that I didn't realize until yesterday, really, this is a company town, and you run into so many people that do different things. J.K. Simmons?
Yes. Rolling.
My son trick-or-treated at his door a year ago Halloween. He was a little engineer with a Thomas the Train Pail, and went up to his house, and I walk him up there. I'm like, I know that guy. Where do I know that guy from? And then also the winner of Big Hero 6, their kid is in a playgroup with Mike. It's funny how you start to realize that all of these people are
in
your
life. If you had ever seen the HBO original series Oz, you would have yanked Silas away from that door so quick his head would have spun.
That's true.
All right, so something I found over the weekend, I thought I'd share it. I'll blow through it quickly, but it's the envelopes that the names are in at the Academy. They basically designed featured custom gold paper stamped with the Oscar statuette with high-gloss red lacquered lining. There are 24 envelopes that appear on the Academy Awards telecast. One of the winner one for the winner in each category. Three sets are produced, totaling 72 envelopes. That's because the two extra sets are emergency backups in case the first set somehow gets delayed in delivery. Mm. The stuffing of the envelopes takes place outside of the studio in a top-secret process that protects the Academy's picks of the year until the formal presentation. Handcrafted in a Los Angeles artist studio, production of all the envelopes requires 110 man hours. Metallic paper stock imported from a small mill in Germany and 40 yards of rich double red faced satin is used. The red lacquered lining is waxed to ensure the envelopes are fumble proof for presenters. The final envelope is 1/8 of an inch thick, and its weight amounts to the weight of a quarter-pounder hamburger.
Wow.
Something we can all relate to, at least.
The company carefully conceals the identity of the winners, and it is also the firm's duty to guard the envelopes on the day of the Oscars. PricewaterhouseCoopers partners Brian Cullinan and Martha Ruiz will each transport a set of envelopes to the Academy. They will carry these envelopes in secure briefcases with police escort. Cullinan and Ruiz take separate routes. A third set of envelopes is placed in a secret location as an additional precaution. Cullinan and Ruiz will be the only two people in the world holding the names of the winners in the moments before the live telecast. Although 72 envelopes are made, only 24 of them make it to the stage. The winner of each category takes home both the statuette and the shimmering winning envelope. But the extra sets of envelopes are destroyed. The elimination to prevent leftovers from popping up on eBay or celebrity auction sites. The cost of each envelope, $200.
What?
To make an envelope.
I can get him a 12-pack at Office Depot for $1.75.
Wouldn't that look nice? Yeah. Then pulling it out of a manila envelope or mailer.
I have a can of spray paint in my purse, don't ask.
But, you know, I mean, honestly, think about it. If you did win an Oscar, and to have the actual envelope and the card with your name on it, that's frameable stuff. That would be cool to have.
Piece of Hollywood history.
In a shadow box.
Let's not waste any time. What do you say we jump into Andy's classic rock time capsule?
It's time to open Andy's classic rock time capsule.
Eddie Redmayne there. All right, let's do it.
No, it wasn't.
Okay, it wasn't. It's the classic rock time capsule for Monday, February 23rd, 2015, and it's Beatles month, kinda, on the time capsule. And I've got a Beatles story, kinda, to start things off today. That's right, the rave-up of Twist and Shout. You know it very well. Today, in 1964, the Beatles make their third appearance on The Ed Sullivan Show, performing Please Please Me, I Want to Hold Your Hand, and that song, Twist and Shout. I mentioned this in passing, I think, a week ago, but I want to give it its propers. My mother-in-law, Barbara, 14 years old, she gets an idea on this night in 64. Right at that climax, that rave-up, she snaps a picture of her TV, gets the film developed, makes a jillion prints, then goes to school and sells them for $1 apiece.
Wow.
Nice.
Fantastic.
Good sound American business right
there.
Isn't
that great? Now, she passes away one day short of 25 years later, so I never get the honor of meeting her. But I love her moxie. I applaud her love of music and her entrepreneurial spirit. 3 days later, on this day in 1967, the lads are in Abbey Road recording the first takes of Lovely Rita for the Sgt. Pepper's album. And you remember this part of the song?
And the bag across her shoulder made her look a little like a military man.
Well, that's actually made by John, Paul, and George blowing through tissue paper on their combs.
Wow, how fun is that?
Already multimillionaire musicians, right?
And speaking of Lovely Rita, does Rita Wild still work here?
You're just not a nice person. But yeah, these guys, the guys making songs out of homemade kazoos, and anybody will buy them sight unseen. Dire Straits make their U.S. live concert debut on this day in 1979 on the strength of this little single. Uh, so good. Well, that tour begins in Boston, and don't you know they sell out all 51 of their shows across the country? 36 years later, frontman Mark Knopfler still tours, and he's here in 6 months. 98 on this day, the British band Oasis banned from Cathay Pacific Airlines for life after an infamous trip from Hong Kong to Australia. They're accused of, quote, abusive and disgusting behavior. What'd they do? Play some of their music? Boom! Pow! Zing! See what I did there?
I got kicked out of Graceland.
Did you really?
Yeah.
Story for another day. I love it.
Bookmark. I have to hear that.
And finally, a couple of notable birthdays. Johnny Winter would have been 71 today if we hadn't lost him back in July. And Aerosmith rhythm guitarist Brad Whitford is 63. And since we always end the Classic Rock Time Capsule with a tune by someone mentioned in it, I'm pulling the Dire Straits card today. So we're going to listen to this. Sultan's a Swing. You're listening to Mark in the Morning. Southern California's Classic Rock 100.3. The Sound.
A message in a bottle.
Fan mail from some flounder?
No, this is what I really call a message.
Music provided by Danny. What happened to it? There, sorry, I guess I stopped it myself. A good morning. Well, then let's just go with another song. That one's not working. Danny, you sent me 3 seconds of a song.
You've used it before.
I don't know what happened. Something's wrong.
Okay.
And I don't want to talk about it anymore. Good morning. Just had to take a moment to tell you how much I am loving Mark in the Morning. Like so many people, I communicate far and work a lot. I'm able to listen in for a few hours until I start work, and then I'm able to listen to the remainder on the podcast later in the day. There is not just the Mark Show and his sidekicks. There is such tremendous talent there every day, starting with the voices and the legal ID. But due to the fact that the ages involved on the air range from 22 to 59, you are covering a great demographic. Every day I am listening to intelligent humor, people who respect each other while having a no-holes-barred rib fest, and some of the most amazing radio talent I have ever heard. I switched to The Sound to follow Mark after being a loyal radio and podcast listener of his for the last 3 decades. I figured I would accept everybody else because they were with Mark. What I did not count on was loving the whole group so much to the point that I found myself singing a song the other day. When I stopped long enough to wonder what song I was singing, I realized it was Andy's little ditty intro for Katie.
Awesome.
That's when you know you're hooked. I find myself smiling a little bit more and my heart a little lighter as I go throughout the day. Not only do I expect this show to thrive, but I think Katie Thompson's star continues to rise. She'll be able to say that KSWD, The Sound, was a launching platform for her great talent. Thank you so much for your dedication to great broadcasting and an awesome show. Have a great weekend, Nurse Lisa.
Nice.
Well, I tell you the one thing we're not having, and I guess I'm going to have to tell this Elvis story. I've been running it through my head. It is multifaceted, but I'll blow through it, and I'll do that momentarily. Mark in the Morning, 100.3 The Sound. Now, during Andy's capsule, he had mentioned something about somebody getting kicked out of somewhere, and I just chimed in with, I got kicked out of Graceland, and I have. And then they wanted to hear the story, and I'm going to share it, and it's multifaceted, but I'll do my best to get through it to where it's not, you know, boring. So, years ago, when I was with the Mark and Brian program, we wanted to go to Graceland and broadcast during the tour of Graceland. Mm-hmm. And this was when they had live hosts guiding you through the house. Well, they said no. So we went to the engineering department and we said, take some umbrellas and fashion microphones into the handles.
Oh, my God.
So they did. We go to Memphis, and the engineer was in a van, and the antenna was attached to the top, and it wasn't getting a good signal, so he wrapped aluminum foil and made the antenna bigger. So we get in, and we're on the tour.
So many stories like that end with, and he died.
And so as we would move through the house, he would back the van up or move it forward to get the best signal. So we're doing the tour, and we're oddly speaking into our umbrellas, but nobody's really noticing. And we get down into the TV room where Elvis famously had 3 televisions, mm-hmm, so he could watch 3 football games at one time, when we were approached by security. Somebody had called and said, you got two disc jockeys in there broadcasting. They took us to Elvis's kitchen, which at this point was not on the tour. So while they're telling us you guys are in a lot of trouble, I'm freaking out because I'm sitting in Elvis's dining room in his kitchen loving life.
Yeah, you want a peanut butter and banana sandwich.
Now, they took our little earplugs. They did not take our umbrellas. So the whole time they're talking to us, we're broadcasting, talking into our umbrellas, sitting in front of us. So one thing led to another, and they walked us down Elvis's driveway and were kicking us out, and we were singing Love Me Tender to them, trying to get them to join us. Okay, so that's one. We just left. The next year, the Rose Bowl contacted us and said, we have a float dedicated to rock and roll, and one of the heads on the float is a giant Elvis head. Do you want it? So we said, absolutely. We decided to go back and give a gift to Graceland, which would be this Elvis head. So it was driven across the country on a flatbed truck, and we drove in motorhomes to get there. The next day, we go back to Graceland, and we drive the 18-wheeler up, and we blocked the gates of Graceland.
With a giant Elvis head.
Yes, in an 18-wheeler. So the cops come because there's a traffic snarl.
Right.
Now, this was what was weird. I got the feeling that the cops don't like Graceland because the cops refused to tell the 18-wheeler to move. They just directed traffic around it. The thing sat there for probably an hour. None of the tours could get up the driveway, so there's a backlog of people wanting to go see Elvis's house. Okay, so the guy finally gets the 18-wheeler to move. This is the president of Graceland. He is purple from anger. And here's exactly what he said to us. And he was being retained. He was being held back. I would like to take you both out on Elvis Presley Boulevard and shoot you in the head. And then he said, you are barred from Graceland, and you will, and this is my favorite, and you will never be able to own or appreciate Elvis paraphernalia. I happen to own several, so that you know. Okay. All right. So that's it. That's it. We didn't go back. So now cut 15 years later. I'm a little nervous about this. I took my family to Elvis Week at Graceland. We went to the impersonators competition for the
You went back again.
He's a rebel.
Yes. Third time.
So we go and we're doing all the stuff, and we had just finished the Elvis impersonators competition, which was great. I'm walking to the bathroom. Down the stairs comes the same dude that wanted to shoot us in the head. There he is. I walked up to him and I said, I just wanted you to know this was great. Wondering if he'd remember me. He didn't. And he launched into, yeah, this is the first time. Yeah, so we spoke. All right. So now I'm feeling a little cocky. Linda and I are going to be back in Graceland 2 years later. So they have an Elvis trivia quiz every Friday. So I contacted, said, I'm going to be in Vegas. I'd like to play the game. The dude says, absolutely. Send me your contact information and we'll set you up for Friday in the courtyard. So I send my name, my email, and my phone number. The next day I get a letter back. An email back that goes, listen, dude, I'm sorry. I realized that I had scheduled somebody else. Maybe next time. Thanks. Sorry.
Uh-huh. Yep.
All right. So, fine. I'm figuring, okay. So, Linda and I get to the courtyard that Friday because we're going to go tour Graceland again. Sure. Again, I'm wearing sunglasses and a hat, wondering. So, they're setting up for the trivia game, and the guy's announcing, if anybody wants to play the Elvis trivia game, then come up. Let us know. We don't have any contestants. Linda gets up and walks over and says, I've got somebody that wants to play. Well, what's his name?
Uh-oh.
She goes, Mark. And the guy goes, is it Mark Thompson? And she goes, yes. I'm sorry, but he can't play the game. But I'd like to talk to Mark. The guy's name is Argo. Linda comes back and says he wants to see you. So I go over, and he reveals to me that I have been shunned from the game, afraid that I'm going to get on the air with shenanigans. And he then takes me in the control room, and there's the other two jocks that work at Elvis Radio. And he goes, we don't know what it is that you did. What did you do to get this place so pissed at you? And I told him, And these three guys threw their head back and roared with laughter over the fact. So to this day, I still cannot go to Graceland when they know that I'm there and be a part of anything that they've got. I have pissed Elvis off, apparently, for life.
Wow. And that is how you pay tribute to your favorite artist.
Don't be cruel to a heart that's true. Don't be cruel.
Yes. Later on, we're going to get into the speeches of those that lost in past years. We'll fully explain. And then later on this morning, we've got Joey Fatone. We got us an in-sinker. This is Mark in the Morning, 100.3 The Sound. Nice. Mark in the Morning, 100.3 The Sound. If you watched the Oscars last night, we were talking. It seemed a bit flat, but that's because everybody that was supposed to win did. And it's always fun to watch when they give out the awards. They read the nominees' names, and they're all five pictures of them up there. And then when they announce the name, the other four have to sit there and clap and smile, but they just got beat. And so what would the losers say if they had a chance? Let me help you with the comedy. What if after the Academy there was a party that they went to, and they invited each loser to go up and stand at the podium and say what they were really thinking?
Now, this is not the acceptance speech they would have made had they won.
Right.
This is the speech that they're now making.
Because they're pissed.
Because they've lost.
Thank you both. So let's say, for example, Matthew McConaughey. Now, this guy, he's won a lot of awards, but he doesn't win all of them. What would Matt say, Matthew McConaughey, in the event that he lost?
Dear members of the Hollywood Foreign Press, the universe is infinite, and we're just a little ball floating in its luminous majesty. This isn't my first rodeo, and it won't be my last. I'm gratified to know that Ben and Jerry's just gave me my own flavor, McConaughey hazelnut. I may not have won this year, but I'm a winner in a divine plan of wonderment. And y'all can jump straight up my ass. All right.
Well, now, here's a comedy icon, not an Academy Award winner. What about Eddie Murphy?
Thanks to the Academy for not ever voting to honor my work. You know, every year I go to these lame-ass awards, I have to put on a tux, smile my face off, and shake hands with white people who have that guilty Black History Month look.
Now, people say that it's an honor just to be nominated. It's an honor that has eluded Jim Carrey.
Every year, one of my favorite things to do is to watch my peers get rewarded for all their great work. But I also feel a little sad for them. They must get exhausted having to lift all those heavy statues. I do worry about that. I'm glad I don't have to blow a rotator cuff or anyone to get the privilege of hoisting such a fine symbol of Hollywood greed.
And, you know, Sean Connery is a former Best Supporting Actor winner for The Untouchables, but he doesn't really care for the whole thing.
You know, being a gentleman, I won't say some of the things that have been on my mind for years about you people. But when you get to be my age, the only thing that gets shaken and stirred is my morning glass of Metamucil. Oh, I'll be there, all right, at the bar, drinking like Lindsay Lohan. It is a pity when Dakota Fanning gets a better seat than you.
You know, John Travolta doesn't really care about winning. He cares about pronunciation.
Dear Academy, thanks for giving me a chance to redeem myself. As you know, for the last year, I have been ridiculed over my introduction of Idina Menzel. But let me tell you something that you don't know. Her name in Arabic is pronounced Adele Dazim.
Wow.
And Demi Moore is pronounced dummy. Now, if you'll excuse me, I'm going to dinner with my good friends Famke Janssen and Chiwetel Ejiofor.
Until he gets right.
And lastly, Liam Neeson has had roles of incredible depth, but he's never won, and now he has a message for Oscar voters.
Dear Academy, I don't go to your show, or should I say, your charade. I'm actually in a hotel room in Bangkok right now, making Taken 5, 6, and 7. I'm either looking for my daughter or my wife, and in one of them, I'll be looking for my keys. But here's something that you've taken from me.
my award for Schindler's List. How? And more importantly, why? I don't know who you are, but I will find you, and I will kill you.
These are some of the best losers in film. And also, a good morning to Eric Harthen. Eric, that was he did every voice that you just heard.
Good morning.
Good morning.
How you doing?
Really good. We kept you busy today.
Oh, that was a marathon.
Well, now, listen, Eric, he does impressions for corporate events. Pretty much any place that you would need a voice done, that's what Eric does. Eric, throw out your websites for us.
It's erichartthen.com, ericharthen.com.
And you'll do pretty much anything where voices and impressions are needed, right?
That's right.
Now, I have heard Eric Harthen do a lot of impressions over the years. And Eric, that was the first time I experienced your Eddie Murphy, and that will get me through the entire week.
That was a stretch, but it was good, you know?
Phenomenal.
No, that was right on the line. Makana Hazelnut?
Why isn't that his flavor?
Yeah.
I also want to say Eric is a prime example of never give up, always try. Eric, I didn't know. Eric put together a 5-minute demo tape for me to hear what he does. I immediately sent that over to Ed, our writer, and now Eric is working for us. Now, notice that we're not paying him yet. If we ever get any success, we will be able to. But, Eric, you are a valued member of our team, my brother. Very funny stuff.
I'm waiting by my mailbox, Mark.
Don't It'll do that be a Michigan in February, please.
You may Hold already be a winner.
Eric, we'll talk soon. Thanks again, brother.
Thanks again, Mark.
Joey Fatone is coming up momentarily. Plus, do not miss, if you are an NFL fan and you want to find out what is truly happening, at 8:35, we speak with my friend Sam Farmer. Sam covers the NFL for the Los Angeles Times. He will diffuse all the crap that's rumor and tell you exactly what is going on. This is Mark in the Morning, 100.3 The Sound. What do you say we find out what's trending? Here's Gina.
The Oscars 2015 In Memoriam segment paid tribute to a lot of great stars we lost the past year, including Robin Williams, Mike Nichols, and Maya Angelou, but failed to include Hollywood legend Joan Rivers. Lady Gaga traded in her meat dress for a more mainstream look at the Oscars last night when she did her tribute to Julie Andrews and The Sound of Music. And here's what's trending in sports. Despite the 3 consecutive season-ending injuries he suffered, Kobe Bryant is adamant that he won't be retiring after next season. I'm Gina Grad, and that's what's trending online on Mark in the Morning.
Wait, he says he's not going to retire after next season?
Yes, that's when his contract is up.
Right, he's going to be 37,
then? Old man.
Okay.
All right, let's talk a little sports. In one of the most exciting finishes in recent memory, Joey Logano won the Daytona 500 yesterday. A total of 26 cars were in contention as they raced toward the finish line, with a mere second separating the leader from the car in 26th place. When the dust settled, it was car number 22.
I can't really put it into words. It's something that just you can't describe. I keep reliving over and over again what it was like down the back straightaway.
Either one of you, NASCAR?
No.
I'm from Indianapolis, I'm an Indy car guy.
I'm from Kansas City, where I think we have a gigantic NASCAR track. It just, I never was on my radar.
Yeah, no, not for me.
Yeah.
Just.
Are you a Formula 1 guy?
No, I don't. I'm not big into cars. I mean, look, I'm not going to be that guy that goes, I don't get it. They drive around in a circle. If you're going to do that, then you go, I don't get it. You try to put a ball across a line.
Right.
So I get it. And my buddy, who's gigantic into NASCAR, says all you have to do is know the stories, the backstories of the drivers and who hates who. Mm. And it's like a giant soap opera, apparently.
Well, that's the thing that I don't care about, is the fights that happen afterwards. I'm going to go find them. The camera's going to follow me all the way down the pit lane.
Yeah.
I couldn't care less about that stuff. I love when they get out there and they're trading paint and there's they're jockeying for position. That's the stuff I love. And I came from Indianapolis, where that's racing, man.
That's
the fastest car on the planet. And every time they get in the car, they're risking their life, and they go so fast.
Now, have either of you ever driven a race car?
No. Mm-mm.
I've done it twice for two, crazy DJ race car events. And I got to tell you, it is a rush, and it's awesome, and you do have to go in through the window.
How fast did you get?
Operating
the car on your own.
I couldn't tell you because my speedometer was broken, and apparently everyone else had a coach in their ear except me. Oh, but I came in third out of six.
Pretty cool.
I was in a race car once. I did over 1,000 miles an hour.
Wow.
Whoa.
That's hard to believe.
How do you still have a face?
Yeah, it's crazy. I mean, 1,000 miles an hour is nuts. Wow. It's like a rocket or something. It's crazy. I lost.
The fun thing about Indianapolis is you have to memorize the color of the car. If you're like in the stands, you have to memorize that. Okay, I'm looking for a pink car because it comes around the bend, and it's gone. And it's just a blur, and you know that your driver went past.
I also want to point out that Andy Chandler said something this morning that I've never heard in my life. Maybe it's a NASCAR term. I don't know. But he said, I like it when the race cars are out there trading paint.
I'll trade paint with anybody.
Check it out. Mm. I admire it.
Rubbing
I love it.
Against each other.
50 Shades of Grey saw a big drop-off at the ticket window, but still managed to remain number one. The flick earned $23.2 million more in its second weekend. And then Kevin Costner's latest sports drama, McFarland, debuted in fourth with only $11 million. And then there's probably not going to be a Hot Tub Time Machine 3. The second flick in the franchise failed to crack the top five in its debut. They landed in seventh and only made $5 million.
Mm. John Cusack kicked free of that just in time, right?
Wait, I didn't see Hot Tub. Was he in the first one?
I believe so. Isn't that right?
I never saw it.
I'm pretty sure.
I heard it was pretty good.
You know, he was. Everyone said it's actually really hilarious. It just fell off my radar. It's totally my fault.
Well, we'll get it done. Look, as much as I fly back and forth from L.A. to North Carolina, I can chew up two movies on an iPad. So that's where I get most of my...
Wait. Mm-hmm. If you think I'm going to use up two of my hours of discretionary time watching Hot Tub 1 or 2... You're sadly mistaken.
It's not your bag, huh?
No, sir.
Okay. Get this. An aspiring model in Russia was told that she is too short for the runway. So the 5'4" Alexandra Tanzer took the drastic measure of having her legs broken.
Oh, no.
And her bones lengthened using something called the Ilizarov apparatus. Basically, she wears a brace that lengthens her bones over time. She has grown 2.5 inches since the first surgery 9 months ago, and she plans to have two more very painful and pricey procedures in her effort to hit 6 feet.
No worries.
Well, you know what the real tragedy of that's going to be? By the time she hits 6 feet, they're going to say, you can't model, you're too old.
No, they're going to say, those scars up and down the sides of your legs look like zippers, and you can't. Oh, my God.
Well, you hit it, Gina. It says Alexandra is 30 now.
Nope, it's over.
She'll be 33 by the time she gets to her ideal height.
Oh.
And the secret to a long life is this. Everybody wants to know the secret to long life. So when somebody who hits 115 years of age speaks, we should listen. 115-year-old Emma Moreno of Italy is the oldest person in Europe and the fifth oldest woman in the world. Moreno has lived through 3 centuries, so that's not a lot she hasn't seen. Moreno credits her long life to 2 things. Eating 3 raw eggs every day.
Rocky.
And being single for most of her life. Moreno was married once. That ended in 1938. She said she had plenty. That's crazy, isn't it?
Yeah.
She said she had plenty of opportunities to get married again, but decided not to. Quote, I didn't want to be dominated by anybody.
Go, girl.
She broke off her last relationship, or the last relationship ended before World War II.
It's nuts. It's absolutely nuts. Do you know, and then we'll take a break, do you know what the oldest living thing in the world is?
I would assume it's a turtle or tortoise or that sort of
thing. No, the oldest living thing is a tree.
Yeah, I was hoping.
That is correct.
Yeah.
And this blew my mind. Have you guys seen the Planet Earth, that series, that incredible series on BBC? They showed the tree, and it's quite literally on top of a mountain somewhere in some country somewhere on this planet. I don't have details. But there's the tree, and they're showing it to us. And it was when he said, the best way to explain to you how old this tree is that when Christ was born, this tree was 10,000 years old.
Whoa.
Wow.
And that blew my mind. That's nuts. And I really hope I've gotten all these facts right.
We're stunned into silence. We're still trying to do the math.
I'm a little dubious when he's like, you know, facts don't matter so much. But it's a science show. But
I'm pretty sure that I got that right, though, because that Planet Earth, I got addicted to it, and I binge-watched that thing.
Oh, yeah, I loved it, too. I loved it when Sigourney Weaver would say, water, water. When the birds fly out over the water.
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 I got the BBC version with a Britisher doing the voices.
So
I like that
better.
A lot better. Yeah. Folks with British accents, they're sexy, even if it's a guy. It's working for me.
Cool.
Joey Fatone is just around the corner. Sam Farmer is at 8:35. We're going to find out what's happening with the NFL. This is Mark in the Morning, 100.3 The Sound. I'm actually dancing right this second.
Is that what that is?
I know all the moves.
What do you call that one?
Embarrassing.
The Elaine Bennis.
We welcome in Joey Fatone. Joey, welcome into the program.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Now, I have to ask, with the days with NSYNC, when it was absolutely, completely crazed, how at a young age did, I realize you can't answer for the other guys, but how did you deal with that fame where girls were climbing your walls?
Gosh, I don't know. Really, for me, thank goodness, they weren't really climbing the walls that much. They were climbing for Justin a lot. they were more the same age at the time. I think we always kept our feet on the ground. I think plus my parents would kick my butt then, if anything. If I was to get out of line, I think.
Did you enjoy it?
Oh, yeah. I mean, like, as far as, like, you know, being, like, you know, 17, 18 years old when we first started, it was kind of a little bit like a whirlwind. But we never really knew exactly the caliber of how it was, because we just enjoyed working. We were always traveling. We were always doing something. So it wasn't like we never really caught up of really, I think, the fame and what we were doing. I think it was just more of less of we love performing, we love entertaining, we love being creative as far as, you know, with writing and stuff like that. So it never was really the whole thing of, wow, look how famous we are kind of thing.
Well, you know, obviously there's Justin, but then out of the other guys, you have remained busy in the entertainment field, dabbling into television and doing all kinds of different things, which I admire, I respect. What keeps driving you in the entertainment world?
Just the love for entertainment. I mean, as far as, like, you know, finding different outlets and not knowing exactly, you know, for me, I never knew, you know, hosting would be some sort of a career for me until, you know, after I did Dancing with the Stars when, you know, they approached me to do a show called The Singing Bee. And I was like, well, I've never hosted really before, but what the hell, why not? And found a completely new career and just kind of never knew that was kind of out there. And then started doing it. I guess I had some sort of an act. They didn't tell me I sucked, which was good.
That's always a victory when you don't suck. Joey joins us today. He's talking about Rock of Ages. It is currently playing at the Venetian Hotel in Las Vegas. Tell us now, we know about the show, but tell us about your part.
Yeah, I play the character Dennis Dupree, who owns the Bourbon Room. He's kind of like somewhat of the, I would say, father figure of these kids that have, you know, of course, back in the 80s, you know, there was all these hair bands and stuff like that, and these young kids were aspiring singers and wannabe rockers, and he would kind of sometimes either take them under their wing or, you know, come to the Bourbon Room to hang out and try to fulfill their dreams, and that's kind of what he was. He's kind of like he's still stuck a little bit in the 70s, almost 60s, 70s-ish a little bit, but still has the love for, you know, for 80s rock. So he's kind of a little bit of a mix of a hippie with a little bit of 80s. But, yeah, like I said, he's kind of like a father figure, and he owns the Bourbon.
So now we have a special giveaway that we're going to deal with this week. We'll give you full details about that. But if you want to know more about Rock of Ages, you go to rockofagesvegas.com. Joey Fatone stars. And are you guys packing them in? Is it a good production?
Yeah, so far yesterday was my third show, and it's been really great. I mean, the crowds have been freaking amazing. And I think what's great about the show in general, as well, is, you know, whether you're here on vacation or you're a local, it's the right show to come out to for Vegas. I think it's just a party. It's not Shakespeare. You know, we're not doing, you know, a dramatic play or anything. It's a blast, a lot of fun, and you get to hear, you know, your the iconic '80s hair band songs.
Hey, Mark, can I cut in real quick?
Please.
Because I'm a huge fan, Joey, and I got to tell you, you really were my favorite part of My Big Fat Greek Wedding. You're such a great actor, and you're obviously a triple threat, and you're amazing. But I got to tell you, the best thing I've ever seen you do, and this is just to let people know, Joey's not just a pop guy. He's a rocker with the best of him. I saw you on stage with the Spasmatics at the House of Blues, tearing the roof off with Walk This Way? I think it was. And it was amazing.
Probably was.
Yeah, you smoked it. So
yeah, no,
this guy
fun.
Knows what he's doing.
Spasmatics are always fun to play with, yeah.
Well, consider it. Next time you are in Vegas, go see Joey and the gang with Rock of Ages. It is at the Venetian, and we will reveal the special giveaway we've got momentarily. Joey, thank you for your time, and good luck with the show.
No problem. Thank you, guys.
Talk to you soon.
Las Vegas time, it's 4 in the morning. To him, he's like, I usually sleep until 1.
Yeah, because, I mean, he's doing a nighttime production. Yeah. There could be 2 of them.
Right.
So he had to get up really early just for us. Much appreciated.
History. That happened, and we all let it happen.
It was on this day Peter Fonda was born. He turns 75 today.
I'm hip about time, but I just gotta go.
I'm hip about time. Easy Rider, you seen it?
Oh, yeah.
There's something about it. It was a very hippie, groovy thing at that time.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you can't help but like the chemistry between the three of them.
Right.
You know, and it's weird because it's clear that Jack Nicholson's, you know, playing a character, and they're all
right.
Kind of playing characters,
mm-hmm.
But you love them anyway, and you feel like you're a part of their experience. It's an interesting film.
The Chopper went up for auction last year, and I know it went for over $1 million. I think it was something like 1.1 million, and it's not the only one. They had like 3 that they used.
Right.
Happy birthday to Ed Too Tall Jones, Hall of Fame NFL football player. Too Tall is 64 today. God damn. The pusher. It was on this day, back in 1983, Toto wins Album of the Year for Toto 4 and Record of the Year for this song, Rosanna.
By the way, did you hear Patricia Arquette's speech last night?
Yeah.
Yeah.
When she thanked her brethren, her siblings,
yes.
And said Rosanna.
Rosanna.
She said Rosanna.
We've all been saying it wrong
Rosanna.
For decades.
Maybe she's saying it wrong.
Probably.
That year, Men at Work were the best new artist. Flock of Seagulls got a statue for best rock instrumental. And Marvin Gaye's Sexual Healing was named Best R&B Vocal Performance. It was also on this day back in 1993, Gary Coleman won a lawsuit against his parents for $1,280,000. Me too, all the way. And lastly, it was on this day back in 1940, Walt Disney released the movie Pinocchio. I know we talked about this last week. I never got around to it. Scientifically proven, how many licks does it take to get to the center of a Tootsie Pop? I'm going to get it done today.
Oh, you
I'm
are?
I'm
going
to tell you, yes. Somebody somewhere spent a lot of time and a lot of money figuring it out. There is an exact number.
It's not Mr. Owl, is it?
It is not Mr. Owl.
Okay, good.
He could never make it past three.
One,
he died it.
Two, three.
Three. Three.
It's all coming up. This is Mark in the Morning, 100.3 The Sound.
Mr. Turtle, how many licks does it take to get to the Tootsie Roll center of a Tootsie Pop?
I never made it without biting. Ask Mr. Owl.
Mr. Owl, how many licks does it take to get to the Tootsie Roll center of a Tootsie Pop?
Let's find out. One, two, three.
How many licks does it take to get to the Tootsie Roll center of a Tootsie Pop? The world may never know.
Oh, wrong, Mr. Announcer fella.
Oh, no.
We now know. So calm down. The age-old question has finally been answered. We now know how many licks it takes to get to the center of a Tootsie Pop thanks to Jinzi Huang and his cohorts at New York University, Corant Institute. According to the new study published in the Journal of Fluid Mechanics...
Well,
I'm not even going to give it to you. I need guesses. And Danny and Jackie, I want to hear from you.
Okay.
Calculating right now.
I'm going to say 1,436.
I'm going to go a little lower. I'm going to say 1,030.
Jackie?
2,490.
Danny. Does Danny work here anymore?
Oh, sorry. There he is.
Sorry, Danny.
My apology.
Okay. 100. That's all.
Danny.
That's an aggressive liquor.
He's doing the Price is Right thing where he's going to $1.
I've done it, so.
Wow.
Wait a minute. You've licked to the center of a Tootsie Pop in 100 licks?
He's got one of those cat tongues that are really...
I was about to say, because no... Okay, so here it is. With the diameter of a Tootsie Pop measuring 1.63 one-hundredths of an inch, it takes, and by the way, Jackie is the winner. Jackie said 2,490.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
It takes 2,503 licks.
Nice, Jackie.
Wow, she was 13 licks off.
You win a Tootsie. You win a Tootsie Pop. Wow.
We've been saying the word lick a lot. Is that okay with the FCC?
I think so. I have my finger on the button. I can't decide.
Is it just a quick, like tongue flick? Or it's the kind where you really...
Okay, now we're getting too dirty.
No, I really want it. Like, is it just like the owl does it, licks?
Yeah, I don't think it's overly aggressive. I think it's licks.
Okay,
and I can't believe we're having this conversation. But
you started it.
Okay, get ready. Get ready. There's a reason for this. You guys are going to enjoy this.
Quiet, please.
That real crusty, real what? What kind of damn
crispy crust?
It's really different. Now you can have two kinds of Kentucky Fried Chicken to choose from: my regular recipe and my new extra crisp.
Crispy.
New extra crispy. I thought I said that.
You don't want me to sing, do you? For Christ's sake.
We're rolling. This is the good one. Take five.
Most folks have heard about.
All right, that's good. Good, very nice.
Poor engineer.
That's why folks call it finger. That's why folks call it finger.
Sounds good.
That's why folks call it finger licking good. That's why folks call it finger licking good. That's why folks call it finger licking good. I'm not getting anywhere with this damn thing.
Okay, fine.
Imagine being the producer assigned to that.
Oh my gosh! Jump out the window.
Go ahead.
He sounds like Foghorn Leghorn. After, you know, it's like,
let's bury the hatch. I say, let's bury the hatchet, but not in anyone's head, boy. But hatchet, head. But that's a joke, boy. You missed it.
Foghorn Leghorn is, for me, and I love almost all the Looney Tunes, but to watch that rooster paddle that dog with a board is just hilarity ensuing.
Fortunately, I keep my feathers numbered for just such an occasion.
A California teenager recently ordered a meal at KFC and was given a meal fit for a zombie. The high school student says he was grossed out when he discovered what appeared to be brain in his chicken order. The fast food chain eventually responded with an apology and an explanation that it wasn't a brain. It was simply a gizzard, possibly a piece of kidney.
Oh. Ah. Did you ever eat chicken gizzards?
Yeah, when I was a kid.
Yeah, me too.
My mother would buy the whole chicken, and she would fry up the gizzard and the liver. My sister got the liver. I got the gizzard. I trusted my mother. I didn't realize what I was eating, but I chowed down.
I always think of Christmas Vacation. Save the neck for me, Clark. Okay, Eddie. When we were kids, that we didn't have a lot of money, and my parents would buy. Well, I don't think it was even a money issue. I think that they liked the taste of them.
The organ meat.
Yeah, a quart of gizzards and a quart of chicken livers. Mm. Oh, they eat that stuff like it was popcorn.
It's like pate.
Yeah.
When you don't know what it is, it's pretty tasty. But the day that I found out what it is that I had been eating, I began my hatred of my mother.
Yeah. The fact that chickens will swallow rocks that will stay in their gizzard to help them grind stuff up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, she would fry that up and give it to me.
Oh, I like the idea. Do we have a gizzard? Has a doctor ever said, oh, we got to check your gizzard, make sure it's all good? Or is that just a bird thing?
I think it's just a bird thing.
Only your doctor knows for sure.
Thank you.
Momentarily, we are going to trend. Plus, we speak with Retta. She is from Parks and Rec. They got their final two episodes coming up. It's just around the corner, Mark, in the morning, 100.3 The Sound. And let's find out what's trending. Here's Gina.
Neil Patrick Harris said what all the critics were thinking at the Oscars last night as he called out Hollywood's big event for not being very racially diverse when he quipped, "Today we honor Hollywood's best and whitest, sorry, brightest." And some of the big winners last night were Eddie Redmayne for Best Actor, Julianne Moore for Best Actress, and Birdman for Best Picture. And here's what's trending in sports. In the five games without Blake Griffin, who's recovering from elbow surgery, the Clippers have the third best net rating in the league. I'm Gina Grad, and that's what's trending online on Mark in the Morning.
So we want to welcome this young lady. Her name is Retta. She plays Donna Meagle on NBC's Parks and Rec, and we're going to get to the show in just a second. Retta, good morning, and how are you?
Good. How are you?
Really, really good. I wanted to talk about your past. You are pre-med with a degree in sociology at Duke University. You worked as a contract chemist, and then you decided medicine wasn't for you, and you started doing stand-up in Raleigh, North Carolina. What was it about the medical field that you kind of didn't feel the right vibe for?
I didn't have the energy for medical school. I took a year off after I graduated, and then I was like, ugh, going back to school, the idea of going back to school was, like, tiresome.
You just had it.
Yeah.
Now, with the stand-up, did you go to an open mic night and it went pretty well, or what happened?
That's exactly what happened. I did an open mic at Charlie Goodnight's in Raleigh, North Carolina.
And were you the kind of person that was making your friends laugh and you thought, maybe I can do this?
Yeah, pretty much.
Proven.
And then the rest is history. Well, now, Parks and Rec, these are the final two episodes. Tell us a little bit about your character and what this show has meant to you, because people love this program.
I know. It's very exciting. Well, my character started off kind of a man-eater, independent woman, and she is now married on the show and getting ready to move out of Pawnee with her husband. So you kind of get to see, you know, the wrap-up of not only my character, but everyone. You kind of get an idea of what their future is going to be beyond the Parks Department.
And the series finale is tomorrow night. Does this wrap up the show? Is that it?
Yep.
Your feelings on that?
It's bittersweet. I feel like we had a good run. I feel like we did good work and ended up getting a lovely fan base as a result. I met wonderful, lovely people that I will be friends with forever, not just cast-wise, but our crew. I'm close to our hair and makeup department and the guys in our camera department. And so I feel like I got a lot out of it, and so I'm okay with it. I mean, of course, you know, you'd want to work forever, but that's not the case. But we were lucky enough to have a show that went 7 seasons, which is rare.
The series finale, those of you that are fans, make sure you don't miss. The series finale is tomorrow night, 8 o'clock, NBC. That's Parks and Rec. Retta, thank you so much for the time.
No problem. Thank you.
We'll talk to you soon. This we actually just made history just now. This is odd because a lot of you didn't know this. Retta was actually calling from the surface of Neptune.
Never came up.
In the next segment, we're going to interview this pen.
Yeah, man. God. Well, you know, here's what happens. They line them up. She's been doing interviews for the last 4 hours. But you've got to try hard to get a connection that bad.
Well, it was a speakerphone. And yeah.
Here's an idea. Pick it up! I have a piece of paper. Maybe you can't tell.
Are you sure?
If you have any questions or comments, our phone number in here, and again, you need to be treading lightly. Jackie's a little pissy today. Jackie, was your weekend not good? I just ask because...
Well, it started off good. I went to Chinatown to celebrate Chinese New Year's, and at the end of the night, my friend, I had to clean up all her barf, so I'm still pretty pissy about that.
There it is. That's why.
Oh, God.
Oh, to be young again.
I had to clean up. You know, that'll put anybody in a bad mood. And let me tell you, the next time you see Amy, my middle daughter Amy, for some reason, never had the ability to throw up properly. She would come into our bedroom in the middle of the night and wake us up, and she would say, "I don't feel good." Now, she's standing straight up.
Oh, no.
She's standing straight up.
Oh, no.
And she wouldn't even bend up. Keep in mind, the idea of going to the bathroom where there's a toilet never crossed her mind. She would stand straight up, just look at us, and just puke on our bed.
What?
Yeah.
You raised Linda Blair.
Yes. Yes. And to this day, the idea of getting to the toilet, it just doesn't cross her stupid, infantile mind. It just doesn't, and I find that funny. Well, Jackie, really sorry about cleaning up your friend's barf, your vomit. Are things getting better now that you're with friends and family here on the program?
Yeah.
Not buying it.
Yeah, so there you go. Now you know the temperature of the water when you call, Jackie. It's 888-696-1003. Sam Farmer is just around the corner. This is Mark in the Morning, 100.3 The Sound. Those of you that listened to the Pro Football Slam with Mark and Sam, you know what this music is. All will be revealed. There's a lot of chatter, a lot of yik-yak about Los Angeles getting an NFL team. Not one, not two, but three. I welcome in my friend, my buddy, my pal, Sam Farmer. He covers the NFL for the Los Angeles Times. Good morning, Sammy.
Good morning, bud. How are you?
Now, last night, I was emailing Sam and letting him know what time we're going to be doing it, and I said to Sam, the last thing, try your best to sound like you know what you're talking about. Sam emails me back and he goes, "Sound good. Sounds good. And naturally, Mark, I'll talk slowly and use easy words for you." So, Sammy, first of all, how's the family? Is everything good?
Yeah, we're great. Thank you. Yeah, we're doing real well.
All right. So now there's a lot of talk about what's going on. And one of the main things I wanted to do is get you on the line and find out what is fact and what is fiction. And there's two bits of news that you broke just last week.
Right. actually, one of them was last month, and that is Stan Kroenke, the owner of the Rams, announced a $80,000 seat, $2 billion stadium that he wants to build in Hollywood Park. And it's next to the Forum on the old Hollywood Park site, and it would include a 6,000-seat theater and retail and housing and all that stuff. It's 300 acres, so they'd be big enough to put a West Coast Hall of Fame there, as well as NFL Network, et cetera. So to counter that, last week, the Chargers and Raiders got together, unlikely a pairing as you can imagine. These two teams hate each other. They got together and said, "Listen, if we can't get deals done in our own city, we're going to build a $1.7 billion stadium in Carson, okay, along the 405. We'll both play there, and we'll go in as equal partners." Mm-hmm. And so that's as a competition. Now, there's no way there are going to be two stadiums in L.A. There's no way there are going to be three teams. It's going to be one or the other. But it's still a very fluid situation, and it's been 20 years since the NFL's had an NFL team, or L.A.'s had an NFL team. So, you know, I won't believe it until I see steel in the ground that it's actually happening.
Now, this Chargers-Raiders thing has been around forever, and those of you that don't know, a lot of times teams like this that are trying to get a better stadium in the town they're currently in, they will use L.A. as a threat to get the city to pony up the money. And I've got a feeling that this Rams situation is legitimate.
Yeah, I'll tell you, it's more legitimate. But here's the deal, and you're absolutely right. L.A. has been more valuable to the NFL without a team than with a team. Since the Raiders and Rams left after the 1994 season, 18 of the 32 teams have used L.A. to get new stadiums.
Wow.
18. More than half have talked about moving to L.A. I mean, how ridiculous is that? So that's absolutely true. The Rams deal, it does have a realness to it because we're talking about the second richest owner. Now, this guy, Stan Kroenke, is worth about $5 billion, and his wife, independently, who is one of the Waltons, the Walmart family, she's worth $5 billion. So together, they're quite a power couple.
Yeah, but okay, their last name is Kroenke.
Right. Okay, so he also owns the Denver Nuggets. He owns the Colorado Avalanche. He has some cross-ownership issues, but that's for another day. Anyway, so the Rams, they have said, "Listen, we're not getting it done in St. Louis. We're not making the kind of money we want to make, and we want to move." Now, St. Louis has stepped up in a big way. They've announced their own stadium deal. The city will help pay for 40% of it along the river, this spectacular stadium. But that might not be enough to keep the Rams there.
Do you think, Sam, that Los Angeles will fill up that stadium? If it were to happen in Inglewood, you have the $2 billion Kroenke project. If that comes to fruition, do you think that fans in Los Angeles will fill that stadium every week?
I do believe that. I think you've got to put a winning product on the field. I think you've got to make it a great fan-friendly experience. But with as many millions of people as we have in Los Angeles, let alone Orange County, and people who might come up from San Diego, people who might come out from the Riverside area, I think we wouldn't have any problem filling it. If it's a good product and it's a winning team.
And I'll say this. One of the things about that project that attracted me was that there's going to be hotels, shopping, restaurants, movie theaters, so you can make it an overnight, like go the night before, have a nice meal, shop around, take in a movie, go to bed, get up and go to the game. That was attractive to me.
Yes, and the NFL has big, and the NFL wants to create an NFL Disneyland on the West Coast, and that would include potentially holding the draft every other year in Los Angeles. Mm. That would include the Combine in Los Angeles, the Pro Bowl in Los Angeles, possibly as a permanent site for the Pro Bowl, and, of course, multiple Super Bowls. Now, again, whether this happens or not, you know, it remains to be seen. It's very fluid, and, you know, a lot of people make this linear, like we're playing checkers. It's not like that. It's like three-dimensional chess to get this deal done.
Sam, realistically, now let's say that this is an absolute. When is groundbreaking going to take place? How serious is this guy? And I know it's just a guess.
Well, this guy is historically not a bluffer. And so groundbreaking could take place this year. Now, it will take about 3 years to build a stadium. So any team that moves to L.A. would move immediately for the 2016 season. The league isn't going to allow any team to play this upcoming season in L.A. It'd be the following season. But groundbreaking would take place right away as soon as they get the environmental impact report, the clearances, and that could happen within the next month.
Wow.
So they would begin breaking ground on that, and then a team would come and either play in the Coliseum or the Rose Bowl for at least 2 seasons while a new stadium is being built, because it's not going to stay in its current market and be a lame duck and draw 5,000 people. So as soon as a team announced it was moving, it would get out of town right away and move to L.A.
Well, I want to tell you what I did with my weekend. And the reason I share this is because I want, if you're a real NFL fan like many people are, then you should know this. I spent the weekend watching the Combine. I actually was riveted. Red and I, my chocolate lab, were sitting on the couch and we're watching offensive lineman bench press. There is nothing more exciting than that crap right there. But the reason I bring this up is because I mean this, and I think Sammy can back me up. I'm a gigantic Carolina Panthers fan. I'm a PSL owner, and I know that we are going to take an offensive lineman this year because that's what we need. So I take special interest. There is one guy on the NFL Network that knows more about these college kids coming into the pros. No one speaks while Mike Mayock is speaking. This guy knows it. If you have a favorite team and you want to really know what the up and up is, you go listen to and read what Mike Mayock is putting out there. Sam, would you concur?
Yeah, Mike Mayock is fabulous. You know, it's funny. We have conference calls with these guys leading up to the draft, and most conference calls last a half hour. Some of them go all the way to an hour. Mike Mayock's conference calls, I kid you not, are 4 hours long.
Oh, Lord.
He can answer the most obscure questions. It's incredible. And I've stayed with Mark and Linda at their home, beautiful home on the lake there. And I got to say, Mark, you are the most boring human alive when it comes to watching this stuff. So I can see how you'd be entertained by hours of bench pressing.
It's important, Sam, and somebody's got to. Oh, I want to tell this story. We used to do the Slam with Mark and Sam, and if I can get a sponsor, we're going to return the Slam to the Sound this fall. But we were about to record the show, and Sam was in a hotel, I think in Chicago. And it was time to do the Slam. He's in his hotel room, and it was at that exact moment that a window washer started cleaning the windows. It was the loudest, and it went for the entire hour. Well, listen, let me tell you this. As good as Sam is with his knowledge, you ought to read what he writes. He is an award-winning journalist. He writes such gorgeous stories. Let me give you one story, and I will do this really quickly because we're late. He wrote a story up about Peyton Manning and how dedicated Peyton is to winning. And Peyton discovered that if he brought a ladder out on the practice field and he had a video photographer climb three steps halfway up the ladder and videotaped the offensive schemes from behind, that gave Peyton a chance to see everybody on the field. Mm. So Peyton, out of his own money, brings the ladder, hires the videographer, and then he and the team watch that film. Sam writes those stories up beautifully. You go to LATimes.com and read what Sam Farmer has to do. In fact, I need to get a link on Mark in the Morning, Sammy. It is so good.
That'd be awesome.
It is so good to catch up. And is your wife doing okay?
She's doing great. Let me say something, Mark. You are my Peyton Manning.
Such a Valentine.
Old can't win the big one.
Well, speaking of that, and the reason I asked about your wife, the last time we were together, I was a little uncomfortable. Did you notice that? The way she looks at me, the way she wantingly needs me, it was in your face, and it was making me uncomfortable, Sam.
She loves you, Mark. No question. Yeah.
Sam Farmer covers the NFL for the Los Angeles Times. My friend, we will speak soon.
Sounds great, buddy.
Best to you. Back after this, it's Mark in the Morning, 100.3 The Sound.
Well, this is not a boat accident. There wasn't any propeller. It wasn't any coral reef. And it wasn't Jack the Ripper. It was a shark.
Richard Dreyfuss has signed on to play Bernie Madoff in ABC's drama series about the convicted Ponzi scheme fraudster.
Nice.
Didn't they make a movie about that with Jack Black?
Huh?
First I would heard of it.
Am I?
How many of me do you see right now? Do you smell burning toast?
Didn't they make a movie called Bernie?
I don't know. It doesn't sound familiar.
I thought they did.
Huh.
I'm unfamiliar if they did. And Richard Dreyfuss is, and realize he's older now and hasn't worked in a while, but he is still one of our finer actors. Watch Jaws.
Absolutely.
Watch Close Encounters of the Third Kind. Almost anything he's ever done was always super, super strong.
And I recently saw The Goodbye Girl, and he's fantastic. I think he won an Oscar for that.
Yeah, one of my favorite lines on The Goodbye Girl is, it's basically Richard Dreyfuss's character actor living in the same apartment with a woman and her child. Mm-hmm. And she knocks on his door, and she goes, are you decent? And he goes, yes. She walks in, and he's completely naked doing yoga. And she said, I thought you said you were decent. He goes, I am.
Something on your mind? Just want to let you know you're sitting in my chair.
Is that a fact?
Yeah, that's a fact.
Well, for a man that don't go heeled, you run your mouth kind of reckless, don't you?
No need to go heeled to get the bulge on a tub like you.
Is that a fact?
Hmm. That's a fact.
Well, I'm real scared.
Damn right you're scared. I can see that in your eyes.
All right, man.
Go ahead. Go ahead, skin it. Skin that smoke wagon and see what happens.
Listen, mister, I'm getting awful tired of your...
I'm getting tired of your gas. Now jerk that pistol and go to work. I said throw down, boy. Oh! You gonna do something or just stand there and bleed?
Well, we just had him in the room, and apparently he had done something that he didn't share with us. Billy Bob Thornton has gotten hitched for the sixth time.
Mazel tov.
Congratulations.
And he managed to keep it under the radar. The 59-year-old actor wed his girlfriend of 12 years, Connie Englund.
Now, Mark, as a close personal friend, did you know this and just keep this close to the vest?
I did not.
Wow.
I did not know it. He did not share it. Don't know exactly what his deal is with getting married. You would think that after a while, how many divorces, and I love Billy Bob, and you know this, and Billy Bob would smile with me as he hears me say this. But at what number of divorce do you look at yourself in the mirror and go, maybe it's me?
Wow. I think maybe after you pass Elizabeth Taylor. Before that, you're still fine.
I you know, I'm a believer in the idea that it takes two. You know, it takes two, but six?
Yeah.
Nuts.
We should have him in and get his opinion on that.
Trust me, he would be more than happy to openly talk to you about it. There's no topic off the board.
And trust me, Katie's going to bring it up.
Yeah.
Well, June Fairchild, a once promising actress in the 70s who fell on hard times with drugs and alcohol and ultimately lived on the street, died earlier this week in a convalescent home in L.A. She was 68. Fairchild appeared in more than a dozen films, including 1971's Drive, 1974's Thunderbolt and Lightfoot, Cheech and Chong, Up in Smoke in 1978, where she is best remembered as the woman who snorted lines of Ajax. She also dated Danny Hutton of Three Dog Night and is credited with coming up with the band's name. When I was a kid, this was 71, 72. This is in my motorcycle days. One of the greatest things I ever did at the age of 14 was get a paper route and buy a motorcycle. It was freedom. I could work chicks that none of my friends who still had bicycles, amateurs. I could work, and I'm telling you, it changed me as a person. It was freedom on two wheels, and I paid for it myself.
That's sexy.
Wow. Yeah,
it is sexy.
You can't do those things on a moped.
Yeah, well, I mean, you make and get around town, but you look like an idiot.
Yeah, with a flag and a basket.
little bell. Yeah. Ding, 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 ding.
Yeah, see, it's just not working that. One of the most iconic electric guitars is now in the hands of the owner of the Indianapolis Colts. The New York Times reported that the Les Paul Gibson guitar, known as Black Beauty, was sold for $335,500 to Jim Irsay Thursday night during an auction in New York. That is well below what the auction house anticipated. Black Beauty was the second prototype for Paul's solid body electric guitar. He rejected the first. Paul's godson, Steve Miller, wrote in the auction catalog that, quote, without this very guitar, no other Les Paul guitar could exist in the form that we have come to know and love. Are you guys memorabilia people? Do you collect a few things?
If I had the money, I would go whole hog on Dolly Parton and Johnny Cash, but I don't have that kind of scratch right now.
Yeah, I put in some bids on when the Johnny Cash Museum, when they auctioned off everything several years ago. I put in some online bids on some things. Okay, like here, his credit cards should probably go for $75, and I'm putting bids in there, and I went way past that. And they went for hundreds and hundreds of dollars. I'm like, you know what? I can't do that. I've got to buy some beans. But I have one piece of memorabilia that means anything to me. It's the handwritten lyrics to Papa Sang Bass by the godfather of rockabilly.
Is it bigger than a bread box?
Wow. Now, if he's rolling over in his grave right now.
You'll be driving
Blue suede
home
shoes,
and just
help
yell
me.
Him. Carl Perkins.
Carl Perkins, thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome.
His handwritten lyrics to that and his signature on
that's
that. That's,
cool.
That's the only thing I've got of any rock and roll memorabilia, I think.
Well, Gina, you mentioned Dolly Parton. I had her on the show.
Sorry.
And it's okay. And she said something. I assume it's a joke that she has used for 20 years, but I had never heard it. And when she said this, I was not well for 10 minutes.
Hit me with it.
It takes a lot of work. She was apologizing for being late,
mm-hmm.
because she was. But she said, I'm sorry for being late, but it takes a lot of work to look this cheap.
Yep. That's one of her standards. She
fell
also,
out.
She considers, let's say, certain body parts of hers to be her, quote, weapons of mass distraction. She's amazing.
She's kind of like, I mean, those of you that don't know, her song, she wrote, I Will Always Love You, and Gina knows this. Maybe a lot of people do, but some don't. She wrote it when she left Porter Wagner. Yeah. Porter Wagner and Dolly Parton were a tag team television show.
Oh, yeah.
And she decided to, you know, she moved on to get a... And it really, I think he was pissed. He wasn't happy. But she wrote that song to him, telling him, I will always love you, no matter what. And that's gorgeous.
And never romantically involved, by the way, just a business deal.
Well, how can you become romantically involved with a grown man that wears those jackets?
Thank you.
The thing I love about her is she absolutely knows who she is.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
She knows precisely who she is. All of her failings and all of her, you know, attributes, she knows it inside and out.
Are you enjoying these hijinks and tomfoolery? There is more of it to come next hour. This is Mark in the Morning. This is 100.3 The Sound. 100.3 The Sound, Mark in the Morning. We are here with Uncle Joe. Joe, how we doing, my brother?
Pretty good, Mark. There's something I think that, like, Gene and Andy at the talent over here don't realize. Your background growing up close to Muscle Shoals recording studio, you saw some of the greatest musicians ever.
Mainly
not in very good shape when you saw them. But you were young, and I've got we're featuring bass players in the 10 of 10 today,
nice.
And I got a song that Duck Dunn, famous bass player along with Steve Cropper, are going to be there. Not that you necessarily saw either one of them, but just the same, Mark, I tied in a geographic reference just for you this morning here.
Well, I've never really talked about this with Andy and Gina, but growing up in Muscle Shoals, there were a lot of recording studios, as you probably know, as a kid listening to the radio, they would record and they would want to check the mix. Mm-hmm. So they would bring an acetate to the radio station, and I would turn on the radio and they go, we got Clarence Carter in here, and they would interview him for a little bit, and then they would play the latest. They wanted to check the mix and they would play it. So I grew up hearing all this stuff that a lot of people never really got to hear, because not all of them became hits.
Carter, did they do Strokin'? I'm stroking to the east, I'm stroking to the west, stroking with the woman that I love. You cannot play that song on the radio,
I'm beginning to regret bringing this up.
Do you have a favorite bass line that you enjoy?
Oh,
anything?
Are you talking to Mark? Are you talking to me?
Either. I want to hear you give a little sample.
Anything from John Paul Jones and Led Zeppelin, or Geddy Lee from Rush, or... Or Paul McCartney when he's playing bass. And do you actually, I don't know, Mark, have you ever paid attention to bass players? There's only four strings.
No, but I will tell you, John Paul Jones in that O2 Arena show blew. I just thought he played bass. Oh, he does a ton of crap.
Yeah, he's the guy. And I got one of his best songs. That's coming up in the Sounds 10 to 10, supported by Amtrak, where kids 2 to 12 ride for 50% off, making 500 destinations a far better ride. Book Amtrak.com. Restrictions apply, unless you're a bass player. No restrictions for bass players.
I bet you hear some John Entwistle in this one.
Yes, as a matter of fact. Oh, he's guessing. He's guessing.
Very good. Tomorrow on Mark in the Morning, Andy and his wife are going to tell this crazy story of the birth of their second child, their daughter. And we also will venture into the world of itty-bitty theater. The players are chomping to entertain you. That is all tomorrow on Mark in the Morning.